Let's be honest, life today, it can feel like you're always on, right? Juggling work, relationships, this constant pressure to be achieving, connecting.
It's a lot.
It really is. So maybe it's not that surprising when, feelings like anxiety or depression start creeping in. And the really tough part, I think, is when you're in that space, it often feels like you're the only one struggling.
That feeling of being uniquely alone in it, that's a really common and powerful part of the
But
experience.
it's often not the reality, is it?
No, definitely not. And that's something we really want to explore today.
Exactly. So we're doing a deep dive based on an article by Charles R. Davenport, SID, published just yesterday on the Davenport Psychology website. It
A very timely piece.
really gets into why these feelings are, well, much more common than you might think. And it challenges that whole idea that you're somehow isolated in this.
Our mission here really is to understand just how prevalent anxiety and depression are.
Yeah, sort of pull back the curtain on that.
Dispel that myth of isolation, and crucially, highlight that help and support are definitely out there.
Okay, so let's start with some numbers because they really do tell a story.
They really do. The World Health Organization estimates that globally, over 280 million people are dealing with depression.
Wow, 280 million.
And then you have over 300 million with anxiety disorders. And here in the US,
What are the U.S. figures?
nearly one in five adults lives with a mental illness. That's huge.
One in five. When you hear stats like that, it just completely reframes it, doesn't it? It's not some rare thing.
Not at all. But as you were saying, it often feels hidden in our daily lives.
Yeah, why is that? Why the disconnect between these massive numbers and what we perceive?
Well, the article points to a few things. Social media is one factor. We see these curated highlight reels.
Right, everyone's perfect life.
Exactly. And there's also this broader societal pressure, to seem like you've got it all together, to seem competent and okay.
So admitting you're struggling feels vulnerable, maybe even like failing.
It can, yeah. Which makes people hesitant to show that side of themselves.
It's like that keeping up appearances thing, but amplified. You see the happy coworker, the friend who's always cracking jokes, the strong family member, and you assume they're just sailing through. But the article makes such a good point. Anxiety and depression don't care about outward appearances.
Absolutely not. They don't discriminate. That successful person, that funny friend, they could easily be fighting the same internal battles.
It really can affect anyone, regardless of background, job, age, anything.
That's a key takeaway. Mental health challenges cut across all demographics.
Okay, so then the article moves into the actual nature of anxiety and depression, how they themselves can make you feel so isolated.
Yes, this is critical.
It talks about how your own thoughts can twist things, telling you no one gets it, no one cares, maybe even that you're a burden.
It's like the condition itself builds walls around you. And the article really stresses that this intense feeling of isolation, it's often a symptom.
Not necessarily the reality of your relationships.
Exactly. It's not an accurate reflection of how people might actually feel about you or want to support you. It's the depression or anxiety talking.
Wow, that distinction is so important because it can become a real vicious cycle, right?
Totally. You feel isolated, so you withdraw.
Which makes you feel even more isolated.
Precisely. And silence just lets those feelings grow. That's why the article highlights that opening up, even though it feels incredibly scary.
Terrifying, probably.
Right. But it can be the first step to breaking that cycle, just testing the waters, sharing a little bit with someone you trust.
You might be surprised, the article suggests, by how many people can actually relate or at least offer empathy.
You really might. Finding out you're not the only one feeling a certain way can be incredibly validating.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit to the science behind this. The article touches on this, and I think it's helpful because it takes away some of that self-blame.
Yes, understanding the biological basis is really empowering. It's not a character flaw.
So for anxiety, it mentions the fight or flight response being overactive.
Kind of, yeah. Think of it like your brain's internal alarm system. It's designed to react to danger.
Okay.
But with anxiety, that alarm can get triggered by perceived threats, things that aren't actually dangerous, or it stays on too long. The amygdala, which processes emotion, might be overreactive, and the prefrontal cortex, which usually helps regulate things, might not be dampening the response effectively.
So your body is reacting as if there's a threat, even when there isn't one.
Essentially, yes. That's where those physical symptoms often come from, the racing heart, the tension.
Got it. And for depression, the article talks about neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine.
Right. These are chemical messengers in the brain that play a huge role in regulating mood, pleasure, motivation, energy levels, all sorts of things.
And in depression, those messengers aren't working quite right.
There can be imbalances. Maybe not enough of a certain neurotransmitter is being produced, or maybe the signals aren't getting transmitted effectively between brain cells. It disrupts that delicate chemical balance that influences how we feel and function.
So again, it's rooted in biology, brain chemistry, the nervous system, maybe even past experiences feeding into it.
Absolutely. These are legitimate medical conditions. And the good news that follows from that is that they can be treated and managed.
Which is such a crucial message of hope. It's not just something you have to push through.
Not at all. Understanding the physiology helps reduce stigma and see it as a health issue needing care, like diabetes or asthma.
And that leads right into another major point the article makes, tackling that really damaging myth that seeking help is weakness.
Oh, absolutely. The article flips that completely.
It argues that reaching out is actually a sign of strength.
Right. Tremendous strength. It shows self-awareness, recognizing you need support and courage to actually go get it. It's proactive.
And this idea that we should just handle everything on our own, it's just not realistic, is it?
It's not realistic, and it's not healthy. We're social creatures. We need connection, empathy, support. Trying to tough it out alone often just makes things harder and can prolong the struggle.
So asking for help, whether talking to a friend or, like the article mentions, seeking professional support through something like anxiety and depression counseling, that's an act of taking control.
It's an empowering choice. It's saying, I value my well-being and I'm going to use the resources available to help myself. Not admitting defeat, but actively investing in recovery.
Let's talk more about that professional counseling piece. The article really emphasizes the benefit of having that safe, non-judgmental space.
Yes, a place where you can really explore what's going on without fear of criticism.
What are some of the specific ways counseling can help, according to the article?
Well, it lists quite a few things, like identifying your specific triggers for anxiety or low moods and learning how to manage them.
Okay, practical skills.
Exactly. Also learning to challenge and reframe those negative thought patterns that often get stuck on repeat.
That sounds huge.
It is. Developing coping strategies for stress, working on relationship dynamics, maybe improving communication, processing past traumas that might be contributing, and ultimately rebuilding self-esteem and a sense of hope.
It seems very focused on both understanding and building practical tools.
Definitely. And the article mentions that clients often report just feeling heard and validated for the first time, which in itself can be incredibly healing.
Just knowing someone gets it.
Mm-hmm. And it's a personalized journey. Therapy isn't one size fits all. A good therapist adapts to your specific needs.
Now, beyond that one-on-one therapy, the article also mentions the value of community. Things like support groups.
Yes, peer support. Connecting with others who have lived experience.
What's the power in that?
It directly combats that isolation. Hearing someone else say, I know exactly what you mean, or I've felt that way too. It's incredibly validating. It reminds you viscerally that you're not alone in the struggle.
And the article even touches on online communities and social media used mindfully.
Right. You can find mental health advocates, therapists sharing insights, people sharing their own stories. Mm. It can be a source of solidarity and learning.
But with a caution, right?
Yes, a crucial caution against comparison. Use those spaces for connection and information, not for judging your own journey against someone else's curated feed. Everyone's path is different.
That's wise advice.
Mm.
Okay, so alongside professional help and community, the article really highlights self-care, the daily stuff.
Yeah, the foundational things that support everything else.
What kinds of things does it suggest?
Things that might sound simple but add up, like mindfulness or meditation, even just for a few minutes.
Uh-huh.
Regular physical activity doesn't have to be intense. A walk counts. Trying to get consistent sleep. Paying attention to nutrition.
The basics, real.
The basics, but they matter. Also, journaling, engaging in creative outlets, setting small, achievable goals so you get a sense of accomplishment.
And underlying all of that, the article stresses self-compassion.
Yes. Treating yourself with the same kindness you'd offer a struggling friend.
That can be the hardest one, can't it?
It really can. We're often our own harshest critics. Learning to be gentle with yourself, especially on tough days, is a huge part of healing.
And the article acknowledges those really tough days. It doesn't pretend it's always smooth sailing.
No, it's realistic. It acknowledges that sometimes it can feel like too much.
And what does it advise for those crisis moments?
It stresses knowing where to turn for immediate help. Have crisis hotline numbers handy. Know which friend or family member you can call who will just listen or be there. And understand that going to an emergency room is absolutely an option if you feel unsafe.
The message being, don't go through that alone. Reach out immediately.
Exactly. Your life matters. You are needed, even when your brain is telling you otherwise. Get help in those moments.
It really loops back to that core theme we started with. You are not alone.
Precisely. You're not alone in the feelings, and you don't have to manage them alone either.
The journey might be uneven, the article notes, with steps forward and maybe some steps back.
That's normal. Progress isn't always linear.
But recovery, with the right support, is probable. That's a hopeful message.
Very much so. It's absolutely within reach.
So the article kind of ends with this gentle encouragement, doesn't it? For you listening right now, to consider taking that first step.
Yeah, whatever that step looks like for you, talking to someone you trust, looking into counseling options like the ones mentioned.
Or even just acknowledging to yourself, okay, I'm struggling and that's okay. And maybe practicing a little self-compassion today.
That first move, however small it feels, can be the start of things getting better. It opens the door.
It really can. So maybe something to think about as we wrap up. In a world that often pushes us towards independence and putting on a brave face, what's one small act of connection you could make today? Maybe connection with yourself through kindness, or maybe reaching out, even in a small way, to someone else.